Hi, I'm Jerry Jerome. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jerry.
Set aside. Please let me see the truth. Open-minded, a new experience. My name's Jerome. A lot of people know me as Jerry. I'm 62 years old. I stumbled in here in November of 1991 to dry out and learn how to drink like a gentleman. For 2 weeks, and I'm still here. So you guys are doing something right, because I couldn't stop before then. A little bit about myself. I have two experiences of recovery. The first half, as it turns out, 15 and a half years, was more of a fellowship, unicorn will love you till you can love yourself deal, and that got me dying of untreated alcoholism. But it kept me here 15 years. Then I stumbled into a big book meeting and my life changed, and that's what we're going to talk about for a couple weeks. To set the table, I am a real alcoholic. Our book describes, you know, hard drinkers, because I would compare myself to those guys who would party like me but go to work on Monday, whereas I could disappear for a decade or so. I was curious as to when I crossed the line. I started drinking at about 13 in the early 70s. I'm going to say by the late 70s. I graduated high school barely in 78. About that time, I was a real alcoholic. I was out of control. In the beginning, I would drink. I mean, I was short and shy, and it made me tall and brave and funny and courageous, which is the same as brave. You know, so alcohol did things for me. But it stopped working. There was a lot of drugs back then. We have a singleness and purpose in here that I honor, but my whole truth is that I would do anything to get out of me. But I'm not a hard drinker. I became a slave to a substance. I had to do it to exist. I had to do it. I had to drink to be around people, to go to work, to live. I could not get away from it. I tried and could not. I'm not going to get into the war stories of the calamity. Most of us know how we got here. What I like to hear at a meeting is how to stay and grow. And, you know, we lack power to stay sober. I experienced that in the 80s, that I would try on rare occasion to get sober and could not do it on any human power. I got a girl, the highlights of the 80s are, which were my 20s, wish I could have them back. I got a girl pregnant and had a son. It was a miraculous experience. I cried tears of joy. I didn't cry. I'm not a giggler or a crier. It's not a macho thing. I'm just more even keel. But as I'm missing my alcohol or missing a program that substitutes what alcohol did for me, I can have some serious ups and downs, especially that first couple weeks I came in here. So, yeah. I had a son that I loved and cared about, and he was born in 86, and that should have been enough incentive to stop what I was doing. That's how I know that no human power could stop the way I lived. I was college prep, went to, you know, parochial schools. My plan as a kid was to earn $1 billion and retire. Back then it was a million, when a million was a lot of money. And retire at 30. I ended up being a laborer for 4 years, joining a hardcore band, and not going to college, going to summer school. I was actually drinking a case of beer up on the hill, watching my twin sister and my friends graduate high school. And this was the public school I transferred from, the parochial school, because I had an altercation and switched over junior year. And I remember thinking that I'm with the cool kids up at the top of the hill, but they're down there graduating, and I got to consider summer school or a GED. And I thought I was a bright person. I mean, I was at Christian Brothers Academy, and I was supposed to graduate in 3 years, go to college at 16, and, you know, go on to be that millionaire by 30 and retire. It's the 80s, computer science is big. Instead of that, I enrolled in computer science studies, and I was a laborer, and I used to say alcohol made me make bad decisions, which is a half-truth. No one ever tied me down and made me drink. We learn in this literature how you know, we're powerless over alcohol. My first step happened out there, but what I learned in here was I knew coming in when I started I couldn't stop. I didn't know how delusional my mind was. You know, I didn't realize how quick I would go from, oh, that was a really bad night, because it started out where there was a little trouble in the beginning and not too many consequences. At the end, it was all trouble and not too much fun. It was like waking up negative 8 and trying to get to 0. I wasn't even getting high anymore. It was just a horrible existence. But, no incentive. I mean, for my wife, my 6 brothers and sisters, parents, friends, I slowly became unreliable. And back to the first step, you know, so once I start, I can't stop. That's our physical allergy we learn about in the doctor's opinion. That doesn't go away. I haven't had a drink in a long time, and I still have that allergy. I consider myself a recovered alcoholic because the mental obsession has been lifted. I'm no longer delusional as to how much trouble that can cause. You know, have this horrible night, you know, I'm never drinking again, or at least taking some time off, and by noon it's not that bad, and by cocktail hour I'm at it again. You know, so that delusion that it's not that bad, I believe that lie. And then I find out as I go through the work that I have lots of delusions, that I believe lots of lies, that I really don't know anything about myself. So anyway, I became a contractor and I got a job to build a house in Brooklyn, Borough Park, with the Hasids. They loved me. We had similar hair. You know, they had the whole Sabbath thing, and it was a 7,000-foot house. It was a multifamily. I was turning into a single family, and I was a train wreck. You know, it was basically like living in a closet. I was homeless for a year and a half at 30, 31 years old with a 5-year-old boy who needed me, and that's when I started considering another way of life. I had 2 DUIs, 2 first offense, long story. Earlier, so I got familiar with AA somewhere in the mid-80s to get my license back if I wanted it, which I decided I didn't because I drank too much to have one. I didn't want a 3rd first offense, if that's possible. And that's where I bottomed out. That's where a couple things happened. I had this vision of a drunk as a Bowery bum, you know, and I had to go through Manhattan to get down to the shore to babysit my son, and I drank up the train fare, and I thought, that's really low. And I was a block or two from the Bowery, and I was like, you know, I have arrived in another sense than Bill Wilson put it. And I also got a job opportunity to make some money doing similar work that I was doing in Borough Park around the corner, and I had an afternoon interview, and they said, we like you, Jared, but we're going to go another way. We smell alcohol, whatever, you can't get them all. I'm walking home and I'm thinking, geez, I think I passed out around 1 last night and I haven't had anything to drink today, and I'm still, it's like oozing out of me. So you get the picture, that's a real alcoholic. I almost burnt that house down on the Sabbath, so real big fan of the neighborhood. And I decided to call my sister and dry out for 2 weeks and learn how to manage this thing, learn how to manage my drinking. I didn't want to quit or anything. I just wanted a little less trouble. When I went to those meetings a couple of years earlier, I was like, oh, wow, I'm an alcoholic. And my dad had taught me there's no cure to that. It's abstinence or death. And to me, they're synonymous because I don't know how to live without drink. My whole adult and teen life is about drinking. And I come in here thinking alcohol is my only problem. If I could just keep that in check, I mean, I quit the drugs. If I could just manage this drinking, and that delusion has to be smashed, right? But I come in here and find out it's not my only problem. It's my solution. It's when I'm comfortable in my skin. It's when I can face people. It doesn't have that euphoric first awesome effect of the early days with little consequences, but it's still the only way I'm comfortable in my skin. And I've learned since then, if I don't substitute what alcohol did for me with a program of recovery, I am doomed. So that's one of the most important things I can say here. You know, you can white knuckle it for a while, and there's certain things I did in my first 15 years that worked until they didn't. It was nice having people love me when I couldn't love myself. It was great fellowship. I got involved with service work, with treatment facilities, though I never went to one. for 4 years and chaired and co-chaired that committee and learned how the nuts and bolts work. I did that 6 through 11 years of sobriety to, you know, one of the driving factors was we lose some people in there. You see people celebrate 1 to 7 years and then 15 to gazillion. But there's a gap in there. I think we get our lives back. It happened to me, and I don't need meetings, you know. I don't have a relationship with God, and this is just my new lifestyle. But that's a dangerous place because we're vulnerable because that physical allergy is still inside of me. If I start, I'm not going to stop. I don't know how to drink like a gentleman. There's no managing that. So I learned about that delusion and how dangerous that was. I learned that I was very immature. You know, I had hefty bag luggage, and I would, move when the bills piled up, and I had no sense of responsibility. Even as a parent, that made me feel really bad, you know. I don't mind hurting myself, letting down siblings, whatever. But here's an innocent child who needs me, and I'm not there. I'm not present for him, even if I do make it in body. I'm not present for him. So I asked my sister to put me up for a couple weeks. She talked to AAers, and they said he sounds pretty bad. Send him to the Sally for 6 months. So I didn't like you people. I agreed to go to meetings, conned her like I conned everyone else, IDRC. Dope fiend my way through to let her live with me. Her basement was like the Taj Mahal compared to where I was, especially after the fire. I had to make like a fiberglass and plastic bed. And it was nasty, and it was cold, and it was horrible. So I'm a real alcoholic, but I don't know anything about this disease. And I come in here to dry out for 2 weeks, and at first I didn't believe everyone was sober, and then I did, and they were like me, and they had a way of living that I could only find through a substance, through drinking. That made me curious. 2 weeks turned into 30, 60, 90 days. Met a sober girl. At 6 months, I was going to smoke pot, and I don't even like pot. I had to celebrate 2 weeks turning into 6 months, you know? I got my license back and bought a Alfa Romeo convertible, Spider Veloci, and got into nature as my higher power, which I've used off and on, as I do the voices in this room. There's nothing wrong with that. A doesn't care what your higher power looks like, just that you're not it, you know? And, I don't sell my version of what God is to me today. It's an individual thing. I think it's really cool that AA doesn't care really what you believe in. Just that we lack power to stay sober on our own, and we have to tap into that power first to get over the obsession to drink, and then to learn to live on life's terms, to learn some cool tools like the spiritually sick prayer and the fourth step, where I can forgive my enemies so I can get peace, you know? Drop some of those resentments I've had forever. Where I'm human, I pray to something in a fourth dimension that I'm never going to understand. The 2D to 3D I get. I don't have any experience with bliss on tap. I pray to something I'm never going to understand. And it's ironic because that's what kept me out of the step work. I knew I was alcoholic, powerless, unmanageable. I knew I was somewhat insane. I got over that resentment. I'm not crazy. I thought they were talking about swinging from the chandelier crazy. They're not. The second step insanity to me is saying you're powerless over alcohol, your life's unmanageable, give your life over to something bigger than yourself, or at least make a decision to continue, and deciding not to do that. That's insane. Because the one known fact is, looking back on my life, I am getting worse, never better. And I'm not going to will myself out of alcoholism. You know, I have incentive, I have love, the driving force of the world, right? I love this boy and my family and friends, and I used to love myself, and I don't anymore, and I can't fix it. I can't fix it. No priest can fix it, no psychiatrist. I'm just going to live fast and die young. But other people were doing it. So like I said, I got into service work. I swore I would never see a shrink because of that whole insanity thing, that askewed view. I met a girl, and she was 12 years younger than me. My I got divorced. My first wife was 4 years older than me, and she was new in the program, never had a sober drink. We went to a counselor for marriage counseling, and we had a couple sober babies. Life was good. But we started having troubles because if I don't make that decision to commit to the work, untreated alcoholism is on me, and I don't even know it. I have these other kinds of delusions, right? We found a house around the corner from where we went to counseling. Counseling worked till it didn't. He was an alcohol counselor and a marriage counselor, but he wasn't big on the program. And this was years, you know, somewhere where I needed a program of recovery. In hindsight, I needed a program of recovery day one, and it's not that it wasn't here. The Big Book wasn't as trendy in the 90s, but it doesn't mean it didn't exist. I found out later that at my home group, this fellowship-based meeting was, you know, they were doing stuff like almost, not in secret, but they just didn't talk about their fourth and fifth step experience, their amends process, their work, you know, working on their objectionable character defects the rest of their life. They lived that way. They were happy, joyous, and free. And later on, I became a big booker and looked down the mountaintop, you know, questioning their route. You know, we come in here to stop drinking. We get bonuses of learning how to live with peace and serenity, maybe joy as a byproduct, which I didn't think was even possible. And we're going to criticize the route. Let's not ruin the view with how we get here. I am super sick. I diligently worked these steps. I did a fifth step this morning. Not heard one, did one. My eighth one with Anthony, who spoke here a while ago. He read from this book. I'm glad it's open to decide. I'd rather not do that. I'm familiar. I sponsor a lot of guys, and we'll get into all that later. So I'm a real alcoholic. I understand the insanity now, which is answered really in the 10-step promises on 85. And we buy this house. So what happened to me at that 14, 15 year, I got a couple young kids, you know. I had some successful years in business, really, really good years. And nothing filled this God-shaped hole, you know. And I'm delusional. I gotta have a car to drive my kids to work. Yeah, it doesn't have to be a Lambo, you know. Like, I'm not gonna say I broke the law. I belong in a penitentiary or something, but I'm a high school graduate living in this area, and I had to do some dancing in business, you know. And with untreated alcoholism, it was morally unacceptable, something I would never do today. And that became important as we got to the amends process. But for now, I bought this beautiful house, had these great years, have these lovely children. And there's good times, but nothing fills that hole in me. I'm looking for fulfillment from externals when I have an inside problem. My soul is dirty. I've never gotten to my truths in the inventory process. Fast forward past resentment and fear. Let's get into harms and sex harms. How'd that come about? So I wanted to walk to a meeting in this new house, and it was a big book study. And I blabbed to this guy for an hour, and he's like, I usually give you 5 minutes. Do you want my help? And I'm like, why? I thought we'd just dump and feel better, you know? And he's like, no, you're dying of untreated alcoholism. And he was an arrogant. I really did not like him. Really did not. But he said, you're dying of untreated alcoholism, and I had been suicidal before in Brooklyn. He goes, I give you maybe a year or two before you take yourself out and probably some people with you because you're very angry. And I couldn't argue with him. I was so dark that I would commit to meet this man once a week and read this book and do this deal as it came up. Because something had to change. I couldn't be here anymore. And I had everything to live for. You get sober, love becomes paramount in your life, you know? In and of itself. I mean, my life got better. With the substance out of my system, I showed up more. Alcoholics interview well, but they're very irresponsible. They don't show up. They don't execute well. But we're very bright. you know, we can get away with. So I committed to meet him once a week, and I'll tell you, for someone I didn't like, I love him today because he saved my life, and there was people buzzing in and out. I swear his condo was just for working with drunks. Fourth over here, ninth index over there. You know, it was just all about this, the book, Our Deal. And I got on my knees and I gave my life and my will over to something I still didn't understand. My stumbling block was I had to understand what a higher power was to me. I had my Catholic upbringing, which I wrote off as soon as I was disappointed by my actions, as it turns out, and not the fact that God wasn't there to help me. I was playing God and didn't really seek Him. But I made a decision to give my life over to that because I was, you know, I had that gift of desperation. Out there, with the mess on and the homelessness, it's easy to recognize the gift of desperation, which doesn't feel like a gift when you're busted and disgusted, right? But I was there again. I'm going to go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. That's the title of my book. That's what's on the first page of my sober date, and I've given, you know, dozens of this book out, and I asked them to sign that contract. Are you willing to go to any lengths for victory over alcohol? Because when I balk in 4 and 9, my sponsor turns to the front page, has me turn to the front page and read that. He says, where's the fine print? What does any lengths look like to you? And that comes from How It Works, twice, you know? We're hopeless and doomed, as we learn in the doctor's opinions and Bill's story, but we're offered a way out here. But it's going to take some legwork. I make that decision to turn my life and will over to the care of my God and ask for help to show of His omnipotence, not just to help me because I'm getting sober, you know? It's my decision. That helped. That helped me do that because I wanted to be a part of my life. I'd rather die in control of my life a loser than, or blame you, than rely on cosmic goo. That's just the way I was. These are 12 steps to a spiritual experience. We can water it down. I try not to shove this down people's throat. These are my truths. They are 12 steps to a spiritual experience, which is a relationship with a power greater than myself that first helps me with my booze and then helps me with life on life's terms. It actually erases those buttons that are, they're not exposed anymore. You can't bother me as easily. I'm human. I get angry. But I'm not going to let it roll into resentment where I refeel and it gets worse. You know, the guy that cuts me off, that I don't care, he's somebody's grandfather. You know, we're both late. What are you, the center of the universe? Active or untreated alcoholic, I'm going to follow him. My sponsor hasn't taken my bazooka away yet. I'm going to deal with this. You know, and it gets worse, never better. By 5 o'clock, he's a terrorist. And I forgot I was late for something because I'm following this guy to level the score. It's not a great place to be. So I had questions as to why we're studying sex harms in the inventory process. That's none of your business. And I knew enough of this book to say we're not the arbitrator of anybody's sex conduct. Well, Jared, if you're lying and cheating in the bedroom, how are you doing at work and with your friends and blah, blah? You know, a good sponsor has an answer to every silly question. Back to resentments. I consider the half of the inventory process, the left-hand side, who am I mad at and why? Fellowship recovery. It identifies the problem, puts band-aids on it, we share about it in a common peril, somewhat common solution. But it doesn't take it far enough. I have to go to the third column and learn how the 7 parts of self are affected. I'm like, we're still talking about them because that was kind of fun. I like sharing about how Joe and Charlie ruined my life, you know? Fancied or real. But it's gentle. Before we get to that nasty fourth column where I have to look at where I'm to blame, what faults I make, what mistakes I've made, I'm seeing that I'm affected by the people I'm mad at. I said, you realize these are people I hate, right? Which is a word I taught my 3 kids not to use. That's horrible. Why hate when you can love, right? But here I am in resentment. It's gotten so bad that I hate these individuals or this, the IRS or whatever's, you know, eating my lunch that week. My personal relations are affected. My sex relations, my ambition, my security, my pocketbook, my self-esteem. It's all based on fear. there's not enough time, money, and love. I'm going to die broke, alone, and before my time. My higher power says, yeah, there is. That's my biggest delusion I've suffered from in here. That's the biggest gift I got from the inventory process. And once I see that these people are affecting me gravely and they don't even know I'm mad at them. The best example was a guy screwed me for $5,000 and he legit did, fancied or real. I'll call it real. He died a young man. He was my age. We were in our 40s. That's young. For those of you who haven't gotten there yet. And I got so angry with him. He's like, Jared, my sponsor says, I have to tell most people that, you know, they're whistling Dixie going about their business, not even upset, not even clenched fist, mad at the world, not even knowing you're mad at them, and you're ruining your life here in anger. Not only isn't it, you know, this guy not thinking about you, he's not thinking about anything. He's dead. You know, and I have no remorse for him like I used to have. I was born kind. I drank myself into selfish, dishonest, delusional. Bastard died before he could pay me, like he ever would. You see how futile this is? You know? My knee-jerk reaction is to get mad and then gets worse. We're not talking about anger here. We're talking about resentment, refeeling over and over and getting worse. We're getting to the point where it can be lethal to them or to me. When we talk about anxiety and depression, we're not talking about I'm worried about paying the mortgage. You know, that level of fear, we're talking about it can lead to death, keep me up at night and become manic and whatever. I identify with people with mental illnesses because as an alcoholic, I've experienced glimpses of these things. There's family members and friends that have clinical conditions, and I don't want to play doctor here. I'm just telling you that I've had experiences along those lines and I've seen solutions in what we do in here. But I have to start with the truth. I got to get out of the way, stop controlling the world, give my life over to this higher power, whatever I choose to have it look like, and get to the truth that I'm resentful at the world, it's affecting me, and that I played a part in it somehow. Just like I played a part in becoming an alcoholic. They gave us an out in here and saying, well, I have a disease, so of course I'm a jerk, you know? I drank myself into that condition. Nobody tied my arms and poured this down my throat. It was the solution until it wasn't. But I kept going. And it was getting worse and never better, but I kept going. And I don't care when I crossed that line. I crossed that line into hopelessness. And after those first two chapters, we find out we're hopeless and doomed, and the book could have ended there. But the next chapter is there is a solution, which Mark covered for me last week. Thank you. And I like the way Bill Wilson put that solution in there. Before more education and more about alcoholism, before the importance of God and we agnostics, before the third and fourth and how it works, and 5 through 11 and into action, which I was going to read here tonight, and then working with others, wives, family afterwards, and employers, and of course a vision for you, the happy ending, trudging the road of happy destiny. So it starts with my truth, well, getting out of the way, which I would not do for 15 and a half years. Dedicating to continue, if nothing else, because I didn't have a relationship with a higher power then. And honestly, I didn't have those third step promises right away where you cannot even be afraid of death. Yesterday, tomorrow, or the hereafter, we're reborn. The end of the third step promise is there. I had them, just not right away. I had the fifth step promises, just not right away. Everyone's different, right? So I find out I made mistakes. One of my toughest demands was with my brother, who I saw this morning, because we have a relationship today that wouldn't happen without the ninth step process. Actually, I'm going to get into that later. But like in the ninth step, I become willing and aid when I look at where I made mistakes, where I played my part in drinking, where I played my part in untreated alcoholism, where I played my part in a lesser human being because a substance brought me to a lower place than I was born to be. That I played a part in it with my brother, I brought that up because there was percentages. He was 90% wrong. This is my inventory. This is my life. I got to clean my 10% up. I got to get the numbers out of it. By the end of the ninth step, it was down to 49, 51. No, there's no percentages. What did I do wrong? I'm sorry. How can I make that up? Let's have a relationship again. he admitted some of his things. Example on resentment. You know, there's things that happen to me that are truly not my fault. Yet I used them and carried that experience throughout life, and I had gender prejudices. I drank my life away is because there was an escape in that. You know, there was justifiable anger, but there's no justifying resentment. When we get into the bedroom and harms, they talk about unjustifiably arousing jealousy, bitterness, or suspicion. How is that ever justified? I remember getting gussied up to go to meetings where the good-looking gals were. You know, there wasn't much singleness of purpose, and if there was, it wasn't toward what we're doing here, which is life or death. But I'm human, and I have to learn and grow. And it starts with truth. So I do every resentment I had. I saw it was affecting me, and I played a part in it. That's solution-based recovery versus fellowship, where we just talk about it. You know, because I have a realization, and right sandwiched in there, no accident, is the spiritually sick prayer. Friend's got cancer, I go to the hospital to visit him. I don't care about him stealing my hat or car. You know, the poor slob's going to die. I just love him, I'm going to miss him. You know? Isn't it the same with alcoholism? Can I forgive my enemies that I'm sick in a different way? I'm an alcoholic. Did I do any damage as an alcoholic? Heck yeah. That's a tool I'm going to need in the rest of my recovery. I have to forgive them. They shouldn't have done it. I didn't like it. We don't feel too keen about it. They put it in here. We may feel diffident about going to. That's more than a nice step. But my first miracle happens. And I get a nearness to my Creator. It's like praying for your enemies for 2 weeks, you know, in the back of the book there. I no longer hate. My fists unclench. Remember, I'm mad at the world. I'm gonna go out, I'm gonna take people with me. I calm down. I really forgive them. I really hope they get everything they hope and desire. I might have to love them from over here, because I don't like them, but I gotta love them. And I get this byproduct of peace, which I can't grasp for like happiness. It's like a goose feather. It's got to come to me. It's a byproduct of right living. It's getting to the truth in the fourth. It's sharing it in the fifth. Him pointing out my patterns. You know? How fear is running my life. How ego that's not even real is running my life. Now, I can't calm these things down. I can't will them away any more than alcohol. But my God can. That's where that relationship gets bigger. I no longer hate. That's going to make the 10th step a lot easier. Because I'm getting results, I keep going. Fear is a natural emotion. It can be used for safety, knowing when to cross the street. It can also overcome us. I fear I can't live the world without the bottle in the beginning. And then I can't live without exercising my will, which doesn't work. These latest rounds, I found out in that third column, not in the fear inventory itself, in that third column, how fear and pride, whether it's pride-based fear or fear-based pride, are influencing my way of being and my chi and my happiness and how I show up in the world. And that it's within my control. We have a prayer. God, take away my fear of, let's say, financial insecurity, and direct my attention to where you would have me be at once I commence to outgrow fear. I promise once I earnestly do that. Speaking of earnestly, when I pray the third step prayer earnestly, I get results. Because I did it unearnestly, but committed to the work. And it grew into an earnestness that had results. My higher power always shows up when I seek, but I have to mean it. I may be able to fool myself in delusion, but I cannot fool God. My higher power is what would love do based on truth, and it changes every day. And I'm not here to sell you that, but that's easier to get with for me. It's reverent. I call him God. But I'm doing what they ask us to do in here. I'm starting to build a relationship with this. I need a God who's as reliable as my dope dealer on the corner. He's always there. His rates are reasonable. You know? I need a God I can go to. I have a God I can yell at who laughs at me. That's a relationship. It's okay. I don't think that's irreverent. Because it's better than me playing the role that I'm not equipped to do. I'm stuck here in the third dimension where I'm going to make mistakes. But if I can keep my fear a little lower and recognize ego as something that's not necessarily true, then I have a shot. Look, I have a brain that's capable of forward and reverse, and I regret my past and I fear my future, and I'm ruining the now because that's all it ever does, forwards and backwards, and it's in the negative. This program gets me to chill on that, appreciate the now. That's the importance of meditation. Quiet, reflect afterwards. First get the committee calm. Or it could be mindful meditation, listen to those leaves ruffle on a 4-mile journey, whatever. But get me away from being the center of the universe for a minute. Let's see if we can get to some truth in that. Is he that bad? Was she that vindictive? Am I blowing this up? Am I getting alcoholic here? Am I getting a little untreated again? I'm human. I fall back into that. I'm recovered, but I fall back into that. Anyone here have agnostic moments? I don't care how spiritual you are. It's our human nature. So fear can be controlled. And we have an immediate prayer. And because I used that prayer regularly and it worked, I thought I had fear under control. When my sponsor asked me to look at fear in that third column, I could not believe how fear-ridden I was again. Decades of sobriety. A decade and a half in the book. Working with a million guys. Not want to be a hypocrite. I'm not going to practice what I don't preach what I don't practice. Fear can be controlled. Harms. Bedroom, okay. To sign a character, we'll talk about the bedroom. We'll talk about the harms to others. Here's where it gets interesting. So I have, believe it or not, in my 50s, I have the or 40s, whatever, I see objectionable character defects in myself. Of course, I'm human and I recognize a few little things before. But I honestly thought I had no amends to make, that I didn't have things to work on the rest of my life. This is the truths I discovered in 4 and 5, that I'm going to need to continue in this work, based on the truth. I'm human. It's nothing to be ashamed of. I used to be ashamed of being an alcoholic. They don't come in here. It's where the drunks are. Now it's my greatest joy. I'm a pretty good builder, but it doesn't hold the candle to what I do. What I have the opportunity, not obligation, to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, to see the light and help others see the light. And I'm not it, and they're not it. I'm the moon. I reflect the light. The light's over there. My beliefs aren't important. I got to get them to theirs. So yeah, I've committed harms, and now I got harms they did as a drunk, and I got harms they did as an untreated alcoholic, and that made for a tough 9-step promises. 6 and 7, 2 paragraphs. Willingness in 6, willingness in 8. I didn't think we needed those steps. I wanted to go Dewey Decimal and get a 10-step program going my first year in sobriety, but they wouldn't let me rewrite the book or the amount of steps. And I know the great importance of it. Willingness is indispensable. I'm a pretty good sponsor, and it's the one thing I can't give a guy. We make a deal. I made a deal when I met my first big book sponsor. We don't waste each other's time. It's our most valuable commodity. We don't do that. If you have an appointment, you keep it. I give you homework, you do it. There's 40 guys behind you who want this, whether I've met them or not. So don't waste my time. And that sounds kind of rigid. I'm actually not as rigid as my guy was to me. That's what I needed. I like to lead with love and compassion, but I do have to be assertive sometimes. It's no joke when they say this is life or death. I experienced it twice, and I don't want that of people. And I don't kill people, and I don't get them sober, but I still feel compassion for when we lose them, and I've buried too many people. So it's important how I do this. And they joke, you're going to kill your first 6 guys. Don't say that. I don't even want to do this. And I can't do it, but I can with my God. So here's what happened, and, you know, I'm not going to steps per week or anything. It's just going to come out when it comes out. And I'll recover stuff that's important. But When it came to the ninth step, willingness is important in eight. If I'm not willing in eight, my defects are taking over. You know, it works in reverse till I'm on step zero. You know, I'm not working with truth anymore. God's not in charge. You know, when I stumble in the step work, I'm at step zero. And I don't want to be there. I want to grow and improve. So eight is important. I have these two sets of amenses, and it's funny how the sloppier stuff, and probably the worst stuff, from drinking, you know, like lying, cheating, stealing, hurting people, being less than, that was tough, but I had the excuse of booze. I like the example of, you're my friend, you lost your wallet that I stole, of course I helped you look for it, you know, I was drunk, you know, I have an excuse. Now I got 15 years of, like I said, I don't belong in the penitentiary or anything, but I got some dancing and business that that I'm ashamed of. And I don't want to go to these people and tell them what I did. Because I got away with it most of the time. Why bring it up? Because it wasn't right. Now I'm really developing a conscience. It got so bad I went to my sponsor who was saving my life, and I'm having this spiritual experience, and I said, I'm not doing the last two, I'm not doing my brother and my uncle. It's like a huge amount of money with my uncle, and my brother's 90% wrong. And I said, I don't care, fire me, whatever. That's when he asked me to go home, go to the water, whatever, and pray on it. Speaking of which, I had a guy who couldn't get sober for like a decade, and I'm like, dude, I don't know, go land on your knees at the ocean and, you know, ask for help. And I saw him 6 months later, and he was 6 months sober. I was like, that worked. Because it wasn't any profound thing that had to come out of me. He had to get a relationship with his God. He had to be desperate enough. He had to do it in his time. I don't control the timeline, you know? So I went to the ocean and got on my knees and asked for the strength to do this. And boom, I got a stronger bond with my God, because all of a sudden I had the courage to do it. Of my own, I don't have the wherewithal to sponsor men. I don't want men's lives in my hands. I don't want to kill anybody. I'm not. I'm sharing my experience, strength, and hope. If you have troubles like I have, common peril, let's try a common solution. It's God's in charge. What it looks like to you. You can't borrow mine. Doesn't work that way. You have to develop your own relationship. How do I do that? 12 steps. What's the truth? I'm not perfect. I got stuff to fix. I'm going to continue in 10. I'm going to get disciplined in 11. I'm going to get back in 12 because my feet match my mouth. Not just knowledge. It's scary in here when they say knowledge isn't enough, doesn't get you sober. They say that early on. They say your relationship with God isn't enough. That spiritual people beyond me can do it. If they were so spiritual, why can't they get over the drink thing? I have the ability to shrink my omnipotent God. That's my problem. I shrink him. I tell you, you know what, you got that, you got, but I got the girl, I got the business. So I'll deal with you with the sponsees. No. When I'm in charge of my life, no matter how sober I think I am, I'm not equipped to do what kind of power we need first in getting sober and then in changing these. I have lifelong hats I got to learn how to remove and change. I got to change. I was born loving, but I drank myself into not. Unkind, inconsiderate, self-centered, delusion. If I believe a lie, how honest am I in business and elsewhere? I don't even know mine. It's a process. So it worked. I had the strength to do that. And you know what? We lose guys in 4 or 9. The harder your writing is, I'll keep it in the eye. The harder my writing is, the harder my amends process is, the more rewarding it is. My uncle was awesome. My brother only owned 47% of the 90. That's a big improvement. It could have been 57. I don't care if he got below half. What I learned was I got to stop with the numbers. This is my inventory. This is my life. These are the things I did wrong. I don't care how you spurred me on. I don't care what you do over there. This is what I did. This is what I need to get clean with, because I'm dirty and I need to face the world clean. I need to have a clean and truthful, honest, imperfect relationship with my higher power and you people. Based on truth, power of inventory. How am I going to continue this and promptly admit in 10 when I haven't done this? You can't jump. I had a 2-step 1 in 12 program for a while, but wasn't really willing to help. Not only not equipped, I wasn't willing. It's not that I wasn't kind enough. I guess it was. I was still too self-centered. I would give guys my phone number and they wouldn't call, and I knew that would work. So I wouldn't have to sponsor them. But I didn't have this. I didn't have a process. You know all those aha moments I had in my first inventory? And there was a lot of them. I grew up for the first time at 47 years old or whatever. They had nothing to do with what I realized at the end of it. I mean, this book of a notebook, my sponsor said, it comes down to you have an overindulgent sense of self-entitlement. You think the world's always here, a victim. You go through all my problems, right? And I feel better. What I really got was a process that other people can get their truths to their truths with. That's what I got out of my fourth. That's what's so valuable. And those 25 resentments in the next seven rounds came down to five. Two repeats and three new ones. Current inventory. And people who tell you you can cover it in 10 or 11 on your nightly review, nonsense. If it comes back, it's a resentment. If you're refeeling it and it's growing and it's getting worse, never better, it's a resentment. Do you like that? Is it comfortable? Does it feel good in your third column? Do you have a part in it in four? Can you forgive them and let the damn thing go? I have to go through that. It's quicker. It was an hour and a half this morning. We did the whole resentment section. That was a record. I used to go 7 to 11 hours. There was a guy with 20 years. He had a little more than me. He had 18, he had 20. It was his 20th anniversary, and he had never done this deal. We met him at a Peter Marinelli talk, and I was like, why are all these people at our six-people home group? You know, it was like this, and all of a sudden, there's 200 people. So we're in line to shake his hand, and who has become a friend since then. And he asked for my help. And years later, I needed a new sponsor, and he ended up sponsoring me because I knew he was trained well. The ego don't go away. We just keep it in check somewhat. Anyway, I have these men's process, and I get through the worst ones, and now I'm equipped to continue those four paragraphs and 10 at the end of Into Action. Continue, continue, continue. Because now I've done it. Keep God in charge. If anyone's struggling, comes to me struggling in Alcoholics Anonymous, I say, how's your relationship with your higher power? How's your 11th step? How disciplined are you? How many guys you working with? It's always the problem. Because when we're not giving this thing away, we're the center of our own universe, and we're just never equipped to do that, in my experience. So it's very important, the 11 step disciplines. I wake up in me. And I hit my knees right away. I don't have a cup of coffee. It's like doing crack and trying to take a nap. I hit my knees right away and ask your will. And honestly, my prayer life used to be, geez, I got my life back. Thank you. My first prayer was thank you. I didn't know how to pray anymore. I got a busy day, Mr. Omnipotence. Come with me. I'm going to need you. Whoa, 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 whoa. This is God you're talking to. How about what's your will for me and give me the strength to carry that out? That's how we pray, right? How about my way is not working? I woke up in me. I would like to put you in charge. You who, you know, is love based on truth. How can I be loving? Here's a cool one. What's in it for me with them? It's a natural human thing. It's not evil. But when it became my controlling, guiding force, it led to evil. So my prayer life changed. What's your will? And give me the strength to carry that out. That's where the omnipotence comes in. I remind myself that he is all-powerful, the director, my employer, you know, and that life is better. Experientially, I know this, with him in charge. It's okay to desire, I want what I want when I want it, but it's not okay to kill whoever's in my way, you know? Desire is fine, need is bad, need is contingent upon a result, and it's not God's result, it's my plan and design, you know? So I learned how to pray over the years, and it works. Now my God talks to me in the same voice as my consciousness, right? Which is intuitive, it's fine. But it also uses the same voice as my self-will, whether it's run riot yet or not. So how do you differentiate between the higher power talk And it was explained in outside literature, which we're asked not to quote in here, but I think the lesson's important, in that if other people are to benefit, it's my higher power. When only I benefit, and I usually benefit as a byproduct when other people benefit, because I really do care about others. But if only I benefit, that's from me. You know, that's a little self-will coming back. And that's how we dissolve delusion. That's how I cannot believe, you know, believe the lie and act accordingly. So I wake up in me and get on my knees. Anyone in here get agitated or indecisive as an active or untreated or even happy, joyous, and free alcoholic? We're humans. We're locked in this third dimension, praying to a fourth that we don't have no experience with. I got less curious in here. I figure things will be answered when I'm dead and I'm in no hurry to get there anymore, right? I don't have to understand what a fourth dimension looks like, just that it's based in love. Page 55, deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It might be blocked by pomp, calamity, or worship of other things, but it's there. I worship money, girls, other things, false gods. That's not it. That's just candy. You know? I've also seen the power of love, like the joy I experienced when my three children were born and all their accomplishments. Like the growth I've made in here and others around me. That's power. But we gotta let it, gotta seek it. So when agitated or indecisive, how about pausing? They talk about it twice. Just breathe. Sponsor stole my gun anyway. Pause. Is it that bad? Did I play a part? Is fear getting out of control? Is it that important? Am I going to die over it? At the time, it feels like I'm going to die over it, but I don't. Delusion's slipping in. It's not that bad. Chill. He cut you off. He's in a hurry. He's somebody's grandfather. Maybe his wife's having a baby. I don't know. There's other possibilities now that I'm not the center of the universe, right? So I pause. Here's a good one. Constructive nightly review. I beat myself up a lot in my life. It's not the point. When it says we don't want to diminish our usefulness, there's a point to that. It's a constructive nightly review. The questions don't sound very feasible, especially the first time you read them. Was I kind and loving to all? Could I have done something better? Do I own amends? Who lives like that? Those questions have gotten easier. I try to live like that. What's in it for me? I'm guilty of that, but I'm concerned now with what I can contribute to the stream of life. That these roadblocks of anger and resentment based on delusion and self-centeredness, they can be quelled with a program of recovery. How can I help in life? What can I do to make this world better? A little insignificant, I'm not God, piece at a time. You know, who am I helping? It's not just the sponsees. Am I polite to the clerk at Quick Check when I'm in a hurry? If they have a mental handicap, you know, everyone's more forgiving. Can we just make believe everyone has problems and be kind? You know, can this world not be so warring? They talk about how we used to be prejudiced by. For me, it was like Spanish Inquisition and Romans taking over, and you know. Cruel stuff way back when, in the name of religion. Am I going to let that block my spirituality? That's why I love the spirituality in here. I thought they'd open the umbrella and let the Jews and Muslims and Buddhists and Catholics all play together, get more in here. That's not the thing. It's whatever it is to you. There's a oneness in all of it. And there's a oneness to our planet. And if we could stop hurting each other based on the spiritually sick prayer, then there'll be a better world. This is a little theory, it's based on this, but I think I root for alcoholism. I have family members that have mental conditions that are similar to our untreated alcoholism or whatever, and I've seen them try to drink it away, and I almost root for it because I know there's a solution to that. Whereas I'm not so sure with mental illnesses because they give you pills, and I'm not good with that. No mood-altering substances, please. I'm so glad I didn't smoke pot at 60 days. Because it's a different world. It's legal now. No mood-altering substances. That's it. That's recovered. Anyway, constructive nightly review. what could I have done better? That's not so bad. It's to learn where I can improve and be a little bit tomorrow, keeping it in the now. Let me be a little bit tomorrow, better tomorrow than I was today. If I owe an amends, people think that nightly review is 10 step. I'm like, 10 steps promptly is the operative word there. I know right from wrong now. I need to turn around and say, look, I'm being a jerk. I'm sorry. Immediately, right? If it comes up on my nightly review, it's too late. I'm not doing a 10th fall. I'm not continuing to do everything I learned in here. So my thing, that's an 11-step issue. Not that it needs a title. What's important is it's constructive. It's to see where I can improve. I'm never going to be God, but I can grow and be a little better. I've grown a lot in this program. I'm always going to have growing to do, which is exciting because I get to go to a lot of meetings. My obligations have turned into opportunities. You know, I get to be a dad, employer, employee, son, a friend. I get to be a decent human being today. Not perfect. And when I'm not perfect, I get to grow and improve. And that's the importance of that 11th step. We're an undisciplined lot, so we let God do what we can't do for ourselves. It works, it really does, in 88 and 28. We have a design for living that really works. Oh, I'm out of time. Thanks.